Hello and welcome to the Indie Dev Podcast. I'm your host, David Voiles. This week, I'm joined by Chris Love, who is a Microsoft MVP for 8 years under the ASP.NET and is now making the transition into a new category, front-end web dev. Chris has an extensive background in web development and specifically around performance, which is one of the reasons I wanted to bring him onto the show, but also to illustrate how his penchant for tracking information led to a recent transformation. Chris lost 66 pounds in 108 days and wrote a book to illustrate exactly how. After reading through it, I realized how meticulously tracking his numbers through his Microsoft Band and also with his Xbox Fitness app helped. In this episode, we'll discuss how developers can implement meaningful metrics into their applications to encourage repeat activity and also to have their users track some of their information as well. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So the last two episodes I've done leading up to this have been different from my format in the past. They've gone slightly longer, and they're both very technical. But that's what I like having about the different kinds of guests on the show is we can kind of maneuver and have completely different angles. And that's one of the reasons I want to have you on this show, to talk a bit about your background, as well as how the web can tie into everything we're doing here, but also how you're tracking these stats along the way. Because I know you're absolutely a numbers geek, right?
Probably now.
Yeah.
I have something that's very tangible for a lot of people, I guess, to relate to the numbers that I look at.
Mm-hmm.
Talking web performance numbers, I think a lot of developers, it just goes past them. And I was listening to an interview on another podcast, Path to Perf, where they were interviewing Tammy Everts. And mm-hmm. Tammy is fantastic for doing in-depth research on how the human brain reacts to performance in web applications in particular.
Okay.
There's a lot of psychology that goes into web performance because it's about user experience. And
yeah.
when you get in the browser, it's all about engaging the actual user rather than the computer science aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where when you're in the back end, you can live and die by unit test, and
yeah.
you can know if something works. On the front end, there's no way to unit test, is the user engaged? Is the user happy? Is the user got a good opinion of our brand? Are they going to recommend us to people?
Right.
And to do that, you really do need to track all kinds of user information. In fact, there's new APIs in the browsers that allow you to track performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't even done enough with those APIs yet to really give a good analysis of it. It's one of those things I've got on my slate to do some deep research on few months, and it's been on my to-do list for at least a year now. But
okay.
we have beacons and a whole navigation timing API, and there's a whole performance API where you can dig a lot of these numbers out real time. And so there's two types of measurements that we tend to focus on when we talk about web performance optimization.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is synthetic, and the other one is what we call real-time user metrics.
Okay.
And to me, I spend more time with the synthetic, simply because even when I'm doing work for a company that does have massive amounts of traffic,
yeah.
the data that they collect on the front end like that generally tends to get siphoned over to the marketing and advertising department.
Okay.
And I don't think they let the developers necessarily see these numbers, and that's a bad policy.
Yeah.
And one of the things too about performance is I don't really see it being important. And I've talked about the path to perf, and I was going somewhere with that because Tammy kind of talks on this, and she says a lot of developers have essentially gotten tired of hearing that applications need to go fast, and she called it the demand to have performance in an application is just white noise to them now.
Mm-hmm.
They hear it and they just ignore it.
Right.
And they don't care. I'm going to give you a good example of this. It was, I think, about 3.5 years ago. I was in an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know how insurance stuff works, generally they'll have their own sales guys, but for the most part, what they have is they have independent agents that represent an insurance company, and they can represent multiple vendors. So I'll just take healthcare. It wasn't a healthcare insurance thing, but a lot of small businesses will have a healthcare rep as part of their human resource thing because they don't have enough for you know, assets to have a full
HR
department. Yeah. So they'll have an insurance rep, and that insurance rep could represent Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Aetna, United Healthcare, and on down the list. I may have a dozen potential vendors for policies that they can compare. And all these vendors have a reseller, I'll just call them reseller portals that, that the people can go into to find insurance, you know, policies.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually had customers or the resellers sending in recorded videos where they'd taken like Camtasia videos,
okay,
showing what it was like to use their the competitor's portal compared to the customer that I was working at's portal.
Yeah.
And I was
Were they surprised by the performance and what users were doing or what?
Well, the stakeholders were the ones, the business, the people who owned that particular piece of the business,
mm-hmm.
The business stakeholders got the videos from their customers.
Yeah.
And then they set the developers, the people who, the team that actually owned the portal as far as the development mm-hmm. point of view goes, and showed them the videos that the customers had sent in. And these are videos that the stakeholders had not even solicited. They were just sent in because the resellers were getting so frustrated.
Right.
And I remember this one video, he showed how fast it was to get a quote on their number one competitor's portal.
Okay.
It was like 20 seconds.
And time is money when it comes to these things.
Oh, huge. And this is the whole walkthrough. You know, you think about Amazon's one-click purchasing, there's a reason why that's so valuable to them.
Less and then they showed the end user,
yeah.
Right?
Well, and then they showed the video of doing the exact same thing to get a similar policy quote with my client.
Mm-hmm.
And the data to enter was the same, except it took nearly 4 minutes to do the exact same thing because they were sitting there waiting for the web page to keep returning after every single step.
Yeah. The difference between 4 minutes and 20 seconds on the internet is, you know, a lifetime.
And you know what the developer team said?
What's this?
So what?
Well,
and the stakeholders were furious.
Yeah, I would be too.
And it was really sad because I think it was a couple of days later they had me do like an audit of their application to find the problems.
Okay.
And I found all kinds of problems. And I do this a lot for my customers.
Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Well, it's been about 3.5 years. I can't quite remember all the
details.
But you
remember the gist of the story.
Yeah, the gist of the story. And we can talk about particular performance things to look for. But you know, the gist of the story was I put together a big slide deck for them. It was probably 60 or 70 slides.
Holy cow.
Well, these are pretty standard for me.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things are pretty common. They made me suppress 3/4 of it because they didn't want the business stakeholders to know the issues in the application.
Oh, yeah, that'll solve the problems. Just throw it under the rug and look the other way.
Yeah, so they wouldn't let me go do the presentation to the stakeholders without doing the presentation for them first. And then they censored the content. So it went down from like an hour-long presentation to like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's like skilled incompetence is the term for
it. Yeah, exactly. And they basically made me take out all the real reasons why the application was running slow, so it made it look like the developer team wasn't incompetent.
That's nice.
And I mean, there was all kinds of crazy stuff, like 50 megs of content being downloaded every single page.
What were they serving? Were they like playing videos that were 1080p or what? Holy cow.
No, they weren't playing any videos. It was just data. It was literally just data. They were pretty much they didn't want to cache any data on the client, and they wanted to copy pretty much their entire SQL database on every single page, even if the data wasn't
being
used. And that's
got to get expensive for them because they're serving all this content.
Well, yeah, and then you think about like if the insurance broker's on a cellular connection, which is not as uncommon as you think, even in a line of business application. Mm-hmm. More and more, it's going to be more than 50% people are going to be on a mobile class device.
Yeah.
And probably a quarter of the time, they're going to be on a cellular network. And cellular networks, even at LTE speeds, are not necessarily as fast as you think they are. Plus, it's easy to go over your monthly bandwidth allotment, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm
in fact, over a quarter of people over a quarter of people in the United States go over their data plan every single month and have to pay extra for that data.
Yep.
So
and
Tim
that's
Cadlick,
no accident, right? Like the phone companies didn't, you know, completely guess as what people would be using and how much of it.
Mm-hmm. So Tim Cadlick created a site called whatdoesmysitecost.com.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and he bases it on another tool, webpagetest.org.
Yep, I love that. I go there all the time.
Oh, I use it religiously, and I'm, Pat's a fantastic guy who created that, and the community's just, absorbed it. But, about this time last year, I think Tim released that What Is My Site Cost site, and he did that because he had just finished up a really cool project for Radio Free Europe. And if you aren't familiar with Radio Free Europe, essentially what it is, it's kind of like NPR, but it's trying to reach the developing world in like Eastern Europe is kind of their primary
Oh, I
demographic.
see.
And yeah, so developing countries and Asia and Eastern Europe is kind of what they're looking at. And a lot of their people using the Radio Free Europe site were on 2G cellular connections.
Ooh.
So they had to be very conscious of performance issues.
Yeah, definitely. And like the
And
kind of media that you're serving to people too.
yeah, so Tim got a lot of firsthand knowledge of just how important it was to make your application go fast and how to architect stuff. And he's got a lot of great content. There's
Wow,
a lot of other
this
tools. He
is
yeah, he's
incredible. Now I'm looking at his what does my site cost?
yeah. And you can plug a domain in there. What it actually does behind the scenes is run it through web page test and then pull the stuff. Or if you run a web page test directly, they now have a little dollar sign thing over to the right of your I call it the scorecard, which is not right. It's right below the actual scorecard. But if you run a web page test, you'll see a little dollar sign, and it's a link that goes to Tim's site there and shows you what it costs. What he's showing is how much would this cost somebody in different countries to download based on the highest published, I think it's the highest published data plan that he could find in that country. So, Vanuatu is like the worst. And if you don't know where Vanuatu is, it's where the very first Survivor was filmed. So
This one with
yeah, so it's
Richard,
out
what's
in
his name one?
the, yeah. He was on recently, ironically, he's on this season's Biggest Loser. He's already gotten voted off, but yeah, but yeah, he's on that because he porked up pretty bad. So,
Oh.
so yeah, the performance is a huge deal because there's all kinds of psychological things, and whether it's a web page or I've cut the cord, so I watch a lot of Hulu and Netflix
You
now.
and I both.
Yeah, and sometimes those streaming networks just kind of yank along, and or I get a lot on Hulu. It's like we got a bandwidth connection, can't watch this, and I have to actually close the application and come back sometimes, and different things like that. It's a little frustrating. And I know streaming video is not the simplest thing to do, and it's not something I really have any experience with, but wish they'd fix it. So.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's getting better in that they have adaptive bit rate now, right? So you can choose, hey, I'm getting a lower quality stream or a higher quality
I'm
stream.
not. I don't know that Hulu seems to be utilizing that enough. I know Netflix
Yep,
does.
Netflix definitely does.
Yeah, and Netflix leverages that in the browser, especially in Edge and Internet Explorer, because they were the first ones to enable the encryption level that Netflix needed.
Yeah, they have a lot of really talented web engineers over there, where they're just really making cool things happen and like pushing the web forward. So,
They're trying.
yeah.
They're trying. There's things that I take exception to, and but at the same time they are trying.
Oh
So,
yeah, definitely. And it's
yeah.
a difficult transition for them too because they migrated from Silverlight over to HTML5.
Well, yeah, and if you, I don't know if you saw some of the press going around in the last 24 hours.
No.
Another round of Flash is dead because Google announced that they are not allowing Flash, especially Flash ads, in the browser.
Oh, thank
And
goodness. Yeah,
yeah,
I see this.
I hadn't time to read all the details, but one of the little headlines that I did catch on reading, just kind of scanning a couple of the articles, is that it looks like they're going to actually translate the Flash ads into HTML5,
Oh,
which
wow.
I'm like, wow, that's very fascinating. I got to look into that more. But so yeah, hopefully Flash is dead
Yeah, well, for a number of
completely.
reasons.
Well, it crashes all the time,
Yeah,
and
security hazard, extra content it's
it
throwing
is
at you.
yes, Flash is one of the biggest security holes in any browser, which is not the browser. What it is the plugin model itself,
Right.
especially ActiveX. ActiveX was created in the mid to late 90s,
Yeah.
really.
Yeah, it's a
And
way of essentially running like native code inside the browser, and it just was not working well.
I know the like the Edge team, one of their big things is we're killing all plugins and controls and things like that. If nothing else, just for a security perspective, but it also makes the browser a whole lot easier to
Oh,
support. And
yeah.
that's where, and there's most of the reasons why people hate Internet Explorer aren't Internet Explorer's fault. It's the plugins, it's the virus protections, things like that that get in the way, or the third-party scripts that are written for, IE5
Right.
that are, and that's just a lot of performance. You got to really I think one of the biggest things people need to watch for right now is the whole third-party script, because those can just kill your
Oh,
applications.
absolutely. And
And
I'm glad you're bringing this up because it ties into an article I read yesterday, and that was on God, how somebody, I'm trying to remember which site it was, is essentially killing off the way they're no longer having ads on their site. I guess Stack Overflow tried doing this a while ago. Oh, they didn't care about ad blocker. That's what it was. Stack Overflow didn't care about ad blocker, but a lot of other sites are kind of getting upset. Obviously, people are still using ad blockers, but a big reason is because of all the crap that people are sending you when you have ads available, right?
Right, yeah. So Andy Davies, and I can't remember his friend, the guy he works with, that they've done a fantastic amount of research on third-party performance issues. And they have a little tool. I don't have the link handy off the top of my head, but I'll try to find you the link. It'll analyze essentially the genealogy of third-party scripts. And if you look at a waterfall of a website, just especially the news websites, I mean, there's just hundreds and hundreds of requests going on, and a lot of them respond off because of an initial third-party request, especially from ad network. And you'll have third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation scripts being requested, and it's not unusual to see a couple megabytes of JavaScript ultimately being requested. And if you look at the quality of the JavaScript that these places are using, it's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're talking memory leaks, and memory leaks are something a lot of JavaScript developers are not conscious of yet.
Yeah, well,
And
because a lot of them aren't coming from, languages like C or C++ where you have to manage memory, right?
well, I don't think a lot of them even realize that that they could even have a memory leak issue. And you think about the tradition of a classic web page, it's load it, go to the next page, total load. It's like closing an application, launching an application, closing an application. That's essentially the cycle that we've kind of mentally built up. But now we're into this rich application stuff, the single page app, which is where I live. I live in single page web apps, and I started building them back in 2010, formally. It wasn't called a SPA back then, but I started building that model as my primary web platform at that point. And I had to also target mobile devices. Crappy Androids over Sprint 3G, which is effectively 2G if you're lucky. But one of the things that I found really quick on the iOS devices I had and the Android devices is that the applications I was build would crash the browsers fairly quickly. And I know some other sites like Facebook, I can usually crash a mobile Safari within 5 to 10 minutes if I'm using Facebook, and
Because
it's all
of
because of
memory leaks.
memory leaks. Like, if you ever profile a React application, every time I've profiled a React website, it is just nothing but memory leaks. And of course, Facebook is written in React, and as you scroll that news feed, it just builds and builds and builds until you hit the limit and it crashes.
Well, that ties right into the great article you had about fast food frameworks.
I got the whole term for that, the fast food frameworks, because this time last year I was going through the weight loss. I started first week of January 7th, and for the next 108 days I really pushed to lose. At that point it was 66.4 pounds, because that's what I weighed on January 7th, and I wanted to get down to 200 again because I'd gotten up to 272. And literally this, I think it was right at this week or the next week of the last year of last year, so the second or third week of February. I was tracking my weight every day, and I had just come back from the South Florida Code Camp, and I actually gained, I think, a pound or two or something while I was on that trip, and I thought I had eaten decently well. I hadn't exercised as much as I had been, but I hadn't really started ramping up the exercise stuff. I hadn't gotten the momentum going enough yet either. But I had been losing a few pounds a week, and I was actually tracking for July 1st to hit my target goal. And I gained, what was it, 2 or 3 pounds over that weekend at the South Florida Code Camp. And
It is South
just
Florida, so that's to be expected.
well, But I had lived down there for a year, and there's a reason why I went down there. But, you know, I'd spent, while I was down there, I was like down there for like 3 straight days. And the first 2 days, you know, I went and took like 3 and 4 hour walks up and down the beach, you know, and walking on sand for 3 or 4 hours is, you know, not the simplest thing to do. It's not the hardest thing, but, you know, it does strain you a little bit. So, and I had done some exercises in the room and stuff like that, but, you know, nothing. You know, nothing. I didn't have my karate classes that I normally go to and things like that. So, but like I said, I didn't realize I maybe not had eaten as well as I should have. You know, I'd gotten sandwiches and stuff, but you know, it just really irritated me that I gained some weight while I was gone. And I just looked at it and I said, it's got to be a lot to do with the food as much as it is the exercise. And so I really started evaluating, what am I eating? And what can I eat to do better? And I was like, okay, the logic sense is eat more fruits and vegetables. And I didn't really do any research other than, you know, just everybody knows to eat healthy, it's fruits and vegetables and salads and things like that. And that's literally what I did. I said, screw it. I'm going to do something that I'm not accustomed to
So
doing.
you're kind of eating
And
like a rabbit for the next few weeks.
I'm a very picky eater. And I'll give you an example. I finally tried asparagus for the first time this week.
Oh, what'd you
So
think?
I was actually pretty happy. It wasn't terrible. So, but I wasn't really brought up on the whole, you know, vegetable is a good thing kind of lifestyle. I was brought up on meat and potatoes and Texas barbecue, you know. So, and I had a, I would, looking at it now, pretty bad fast food habit. And you know, I write about it in the book. Some of the You know, some of the things I go through and evaluate some of the meals that I typically would get at some of the restaurants, for example. And as I started looking at the nutrition value of those meals this time last year, and I started looking at how they essentially were composed, I started seeing a lot of parallels to these popular JavaScript frameworks that everybody gets excited about. And I've had a problem with these frameworks for a few years because, like I said, I started doing these single page apps back in 2010, when the world was pretty much just jQuery at the time. There were some other libraries like Prototype and MooTools and things like that. Some developers were using, but I was in the mainstream with jQuery, and I learned real fast with this mobile-first approach. jQuery was my enemy. It was big, it was bulky, and it just took forever to load.
And a lot of the features that are in there are in the language itself now, in JavaScript.
That's exactly right. And, you know, jQuery influenced the browser standardization stuff as much as anything else. And I know like John Rezig worked with the different browser vendors to get things like Query Selector all implemented, for example. Whereas in the past, all we had was get, you know, get by element ID for, you know, and
Loop through.
then you had to, yeah, and you or you had to do essentially what Sizzle does, which is the selector engine in jQuery. You had to parse through all the XML, which is a very expensive operation. And you know, once the query selector all and all these other selector APIs, for example, came out, they modified jQuery to use those if they were present, and then fall back to Sizzle, which of course Sizzle's a big chunk of code, so you're downloading that every single time, even if it's not needed. And you know, there's a lot of functions in jQuery, which essentially are plugins, and if you think about it, that you don't really use that often, if ever at all. I mean, how many times have you used the map
But
reduce
it's still
functions in
there.
jQuery? It's there, yeah, and it's got its own promise library built in. And if you were using promises, most likely you downloaded a
That's
promise
right.
polyfill anyway. So now you've got two instances of it, and then maybe another library you use has its own promise library built in.
And
So
then
now you've got
quickly
three
adds up and
instances of
adds up and adds up.
promises. Yeah, and you know, and I had done some evaluation for clients of, you know, Angular and you know, Ember and this, you know, last year React was getting all of a sudden getting all the
Now we got
attention, and
Angular
Angular
2
was
coming
like
out,
the yesterday's news kind of thing.
which is
But
a monster from what it looks
yeah,
like
now you got
mostly.
Angular 2, you got Aurelia, and yeah, I don't know. I've given up on them because I just look at all the code they produce. Like just the basic Hello World for the React application. I had a client working on this time last year trying to learn it. They were creating nearly 700 kilobytes of JavaScript, and I'm like,
I started using
why?
Angular
Why?
2 last week for a hackathon project we had at work. Jeremy Foster was showing me it, and I was able to make the transition, but when I saw how big the library was and the framework, I was like, whoa, this is huge.
And it's, yeah. And it's supposed to be modular, like, isn't it? But that's just it. I don't think they understand modular. It's almost like it's an excuse to throw more crap in there.
A lot of people work out of the Bay Area, so they assume that everyone has the newest MacBook Pro and 150 megabytes a second down.
Exactly. Facebook started this 2G Tuesday thing. And I think more companies need to do that and force their developers to work on slow networks. And at the same time, the other side of it too is a lot of web developers in particular are working on i7 MacBooks. As soon as I saw the first service announced, I knew that was what I was going to get. And there was it was more than just, oh, I'm going to have this coolest, sexy new toy. Because I had been looking around for a brand new laptop at that point. And I actually held off for an extra 6 months to get the first Surface. But the number one reason why is because it was a mobile-class device that was a full-blown PC. And I really think if you're going to build front-end, you have to have the devices that your customers are going to use. And if you can develop on a mobile touch screen device like a Surface, you are more in touch with 90% of your potential users than you'll ever be on a big, powerful 17 or 19 inch laptop.
Because most people are accessing the internet through their mobile
with
devices.
With multiple monitors attached. And I'm a big advocate of going to a coffee shop or a sandwich shop and working from there, and or working in the airport. I write some of my best code on airplanes because completely unplug. I get off the network. I never get on the Wi-Fi on the planes unless I'm just exhausted and I want to watch TV. Like I wrote Deep Tissue on an airplane
distractions
with no Wi-Fi. Yeah, okay. And Deep Tissue is a touch abstraction library. So I literally wrote it with local documentation, testing it on airplanes. I had about there was a little stretch in there where I had, I don't know, like 10 or 12 hours of flight time over a couple of 3 weeks. And I took that time on those planes and I wrote Deep Tissue. And I do some really good work there because I just throw the headphones on. No one bothers me. And it's a good experience because I'm limiting my capabilities, you know, with no Wi-Fi and no distractions either, you know. And I'm on a device that's mobile. And as I'm looking around the airport, I'm seeing most people using mobile devices.
And that's how people are getting things.
And they're doing their work. They're not like filling they're in not just dead sitting air. There playing yeah. around. Yeah, they've figured out how to get their iPad on their corporate network through a VPN, for example. And they're logging in using their line of business web applications. And that's what they're using. And you know, a lot of companies that I go into, they're like, "Ah, no one uses mobile," and
you're like,
I'm
really
sitting there looking over their shoulder at
a blog lately.
Look around you. Look at how many people have mobile devices on their desk, whether it's phones or tablets. And some of these guys are. I mean, you think they're using the laptops you issue, and they're not. As soon as you turn away, they're just like my 10-year-old stepdaughter. As soon as you turn away, she's got Netflix on, watching cartoons, even though she's not supposed to.
And you look at like
that's what they're doing.
Look at the valuation of some of these companies, right? Like 3 years ago, Facebook IPO'd shortly before that. Their IPO started to tank, and that was because they did not have a solution for mobile. I think we're just starting ads there, and most of their users weren't using mobile yet. So they had to figure out how we're going to get ads in front of all these people who are going mobile. Then all of a sudden, most of Facebook's traffic is now done through mobile devices. They finally figured out an ad model. And their stock has been through the roof. Twitter, on the other hand, has never been able to figure out advertising, and most of their users, again, are coming from mobile, and their stock is doing the inverse. It's just going straight down. So we live in a very much a mobile-first world where you've got to build your games, your web applications, with that in mind, and also the performance implications of it, too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, from a web point of view right now, if you're not a mobile-first responsive user experience, you've lost your battle right there. And, you know, I still have clients that tell me, we're not going to worry about this responsive thing right now. And I'm like, well, then within a year, you're going to have to rewrite all this code anyway. So why don't you do it now? And they're like, well, we control the computers. I'm like, no, you don't. And I'm showing them research where, dude, you're not. And then I actually show them their actual business users, and they just,
It's
they're
like,
like, no,
oh,
they're
you
using our
think
corporate
so?
issue stuff. I'm like, no, they're not. So, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of application, whether you're line of business or a leisure application or, you know, like a game. You have to think about what kind of platform are the people actually using. And, you know, mobile gaming is really popular. I mean, it's not the same kind of games that I would play on my Xbox, but, you know, you got Candy Crush and I never really got into that. My dad's into that. The last game I kind of got addicted to was the
It's like
2048
math and
game.
numbers.
Yeah. I'm not much of a game person on the phone. You know, I've played a little bit of Angry Birds and stuff like that. And, you know, when I first started getting the smartphones, I think
Flight
Flight
Control? I don't
Control
even
was
know
the
what
one I
that
really got
is.
into.
Oh,
It's where
okay.
you guide planes into a landing strip and they keep kind of changing it and they just keep adding more planes. I don't know. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, I know
Yeah.
what game this
But, you
is.
know, it was
Yeah,
one of
I've
those things.
seen
It was
it.
kind of like, how can I, can I beat, can I, yeah, can I beat my last score? Can I figure out the pattern a little better this time? And, you know, I see that same, you know, mental pattern coming into my fitness and exercise and stuff right now too. And so, you know, part of the stuff for me to go through that weight loss thing was knowing where I was. And like I said, I started off by just weighing myself every morning and kind of tracking what did I do over the last 24 hours. Okay, I lost 0.5 pound. Okay, so what I ate probably was pretty good. And, you know, if I gained weight, it's like, okay, then I you know, 'cause like I had pizza on Saturday night and
Okay.
the next day I
I'll be
was
sure not to have
three
pizza
pounds
next time.
heavier. Okay.
It's just so
Yeah.
delicious,
Every
though.
time I have pizza, I gain weight. It's un
So you
I
found something
know.
else to satisfy that need,
Yeah.
though, I'm
All right.
sure.
Sigh.
Okay. Oh, I like
Well, now
those
I'm
too.
addicted
Do you
to
put any
fruit
vanilla protein
smoothies.
in there or what?
In fact, I don't put protein in mine. I do put some
Oh, yeah.
Greek
Greek yogurt's
yogurt. Well, I guess
good.
that is protein, but I put a little bit of Greek yogurt, yeah, and some Osea juice. But I throw like any kind of fruit I can find in the house. You know, I'm constantly buying fruit. I think the people at the grocery store think I'm a
But
nut
that's
because
how
I
you get like
walk
your
through there and
sugar
probably buy
fix throughout the day,
$60 worth
though,
of
like
fruit
your
a week.
craving.
Yeah, I
Wow.
haven't had a candy bar in over a year. Yeah, and I haven't had
Yeah,
any
that's a
soft
kicker
drinks
for a lot of people too, even if it's
since I started the
diet,
diet.
which has been my crux for a while.
And you know what? Diet, when you drink
Wow, really?
diet
How does
soft
this
drinks,
work?
you gain more weight. All right, so there's a
Okay.
psychological effect, and there's been research behind this. So when you drink a diet soda and you've got the synthetic
Is
sugar in it,
expecting.
your body is mentally says, okay, I'm getting the sugar. And when it doesn't have the sugar, it says, okay, where's the sugar? Where's the sugar? And so it triggers the hormones that make you crave sweets. So, for example, a common scenario is, all right, I had a diet soda, my body says I need something sweet because it didn't sense that it actually got the sugar.
Yeah, which kind of
So
offset
then
the
you go eat a
entire
candy
purpose of
bar.
you having that drink.
And then you, yeah, so you get, you drink, you, sh you eat the sugar. And by the way, this is one of the things I learned doing the research for the book. Sugar essentially metabolizes to fat. So you can eat fat as fat, and then you can eat sugar that turns into fat. And the average American eats
Wow, holy
about 80
cow.
pounds of
I'm trying
sugar
to
a
picture
year.
like someone holding a bag of sugar.
Well, it's interesting. Some of these, you know, kind of weight loss shows, they'll have them do challenges where they do have to deal, you know, carry the amount of soda that the average American drinks a year, or you know, wheelbarrow the sugar that you eat, or you know, I don't know,
And they're
do
probably
something
surprised
with
to see
the
exactly how
fat in
much
a
they're
liquid
actually
state
consuming.
that a typical American eats. Yeah, exactly. It's a big eye opener to me just seeing all that. So yeah, I mean, I had to start, you know, tracking the weight and correlating it to what I was doing, and then, you know, I started doing some more research and learned how to calculate my daily metabolism. And so there's a term called basal metabolic rate, and what that means is if you did nothing but effectively just lay in bed all day long, how many calories would your body burn? And it's dependent on how much you weigh, how old you are, and if you're a male or a female. And there's basically two formulas, and you plug in those variables. Like I'm 44 years old, and I actually set up I set up a spreadsheet where I tracked my weight, and then I had another piece there that did the automatic calculation with based on the formula that gave me my basal metabolic rate. And then there's a fudge factor that you can multiply that by to give you your what they call the active metabolic rate. So you gauge how active you are during the day. And this is where there's some guesswork and frame of reference stuff. So I was like, well, I'm working out a couple times a day, so I'm probably moderately active, you know. So
But
I multiplied it by like 1.5, I think. And I think my, back this time last year, my active metabolic rate was probably, I would have probably calculated it somewhere around 2,800 calories a day. And mid-March, I finally got the band because they were on back order, right? And so I finally got mine like mid-March last year. And of course, the band tracks your activity, and you can say, okay, I'm doing exercise now. So it really tracks your heart rate constantly, and can do a pretty accurate guesstimate of how many calories you're burning based on your weight and height and all that kind of stuff. And I learned real quickly I was burning probably 3,500 calories a day, which
That's
is an
huge.
extra 700 calories over what I. Yeah, that's big. That's a big difference, right? I had no clue. I had no clue how many calories I
And
burned
now
in a
you have a rough
workout.
idea, right?
I had no way to know that until I got the band, right? And most people don't know how many calories they eat. They don't know how many calories they burn. So it was a few weeks ago, I was sitting at dinner and I was asking the kids, I was like, so how many calories a day do you think you burn? And I think my 10-year-old said, 10,000. And I'm thinking, for you, that's probably
It's
about
three-year-old,
right.
so.
But no. And then the 15-year-old is like, I don't know,
And you know,
500.
typical American is probably thinking something very similar. We're thinking, I see that at the back of my cereal box, it says I need to have 2,000 calories a day.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know
Or
if most
understand
people
how
don't read the
labels work,
labels, and that's
right?
another important thing you need to do. But yeah, understand how to read them. There's a big
Yeah, the whole
difference between
box of
looking at
cereal
it
is
and
not 250
understanding what you're
calories.
looking
That's
at.
per serving. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a
Be
thousand
very
servings in a
careful.
box, and yeah. So I started asking him. I was like, "Well, how many calories do you think's in our dinner tonight? And how many calories do you think is?" Because we live, I can literally
So
walk
Sonic,
to
explain
the
Sonic
Sonic
to
in
people who are
about
not in
60
our area,
seconds.
our neck of the woods. We're both in the Philadelphia area.
So,
Right.
yeah. Well, I mean, Sonic's based in Oklahoma, by the way. And I grew up with Sonics around me in Texas, and I
Yeah.
love the foot long Coney dogs. But basically, it's a fast food restaurant that is a drive up place. So it's kind of a throwback to the 60s and 50s roller skate kind of thing that. Some of them still do roller skates as a gimmick, but basically you go up and drive up and you make an order, and then eventually they bring it out to your car, and you can sit there in your car and eat it, and
Yeah.
they'll put the tray on your window and stuff. So it's kind of fun. But they're also known for
Oh,
their
yes.
ice cream desserts. Oh, they're so good. And I read an article over the weekend. They've got a chocolate chip cookie dough peanut
Until you
butter
realize how many
milkshake that just
calories it
sounds
is.
amazing, except 2,300
My God.
calories. That is more
Holy
calories than I
cow.
eat in a typical day. And so much of it is fat. And, the one chapter in the book, I go through and just break down some of the
I'm taking
meals
a
I
look at
would
the menu
order at
right now. I'm
places.
almost afraid to see.
Like I really, yeah. So I really like, I used to
Oh, I
like
love
the
that.
double baconator at Wendy's because, it's got bacon on it.
Yeah,
Bacon.
seriously.
I love bacon. What guy doesn't like bacon? In fact, I know there's a survey out there that said
There's
38% of men prefer
a
bacon
right
to
time for
sex.
everything.
That's how important bacon is. Exactly. So I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but basically the supersized baconator meal that I used to get at
Oh
Wendy's
my
was something
God, that's like
close
a
to 1,900
daily meal.
calories.
That's your like most people's daily eating habit.
With probably more fat than I should have in an entire week,
Know
And then there's
Sonic Blasts are
sugar
so
and all
good.
that
They
kind of
kind of
stuff
remind
involved.
me of
Oh, it's
when a
ridiculous.
McFlurry at McDonald's. Little ice cream with candy or cookie pieces. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's like
Yeah.
my go-to when I come home. Like if I'm driving,
Yeah,
through Philadelphia and it's late at night and I'm like, "Oh, you know what? I'm kind of craving something." Yeah, Checkers or McDonald's. I'm always getting the shakes.
Yeah, McFlurries have good memories for me.
Oh,
The first
wow.
one I have was they were test marketing them in Honolulu. And the only time I've gone to Hawaii, I
Right?
got a McFlurry on there. I was like, these are so good.
And you know,
So I always
actually, I
think
think
about
of
Hawaii when I
Germany
get
because I was
one.
out there. They
So
have McCafés, which are like fancier McDonald's, and they have
yes.
different flavors there for whatever reason. They had a Kit Kat McFlurry, and I saw this and I thought, "Oh my goodness, this is incredible!" So that's my fast food talk.
So, I think I said I haven't had a candy bar. I've had candy bar
Okay.
toppings on my yogurt at
Hey,
the Menchie's, now that I
we
think about
spoke
it.
about
So I'm not gonna
BMR before, but something that's always intrigued me, and you mentioned this in your book, you spoke about BMI, body mass index. So I've always had a sticking
Yes.
point with this because it has just never seemed remotely close to correct or accurate for me. Like I'm 6'4", 230. I'm in very good shape. I just ran 4 miles this morning. And it has me on nearly, so I'm on overweight and borderline obese. And I'm sitting there thinking, what? No. So I look for LeBron James. I find out what his statistics are, put him in there, and he is overweight. And I'm thinking, LeBron James, he is a specimen.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that too, and I think most people are. And everybody always think, "Oh, that's just not realistic." I think for the average person, yeah, it is very realistic. Now, when you look at LeBron
6'8",
James, he is
249.
a
So
very
his
fit
BMI,
athlete.
27.4, which puts him middle
Yeah.
of overweight.
But you know what? I
Yeah.
wonder what his actual body fat percentage is. Because,
Yeah,
when
so
I
tell
played
us about that.
football in
Where did you play?
college, and I played Division I football as a walk-on,
Okay.
I played at North Carolina State, and I walked on to be the place kicker, but I wound up
All right.
playing center on the scout team my freshman year, and eventually matriculated to
Nice.
be
You
the
got kind
team's
of
long
jack of all
snapper.
trades.
So I wasn't. So I wasn't like the star of the team, but I got the experience. I didn't get crushed or killed. I did get take some hits in the Peach Bowl my last game, but other than that, it was such a good experience for me to go through. And playing long snapper gave me the ability to do some other things in college that most of the I would say the mainstream Division I athletes don't necessarily get to do because of time constraints. It's not because they don't want to participate in extracurricular activities. It's just, we were spending 40 hours a week. It's a full-time job to be an athlete and in a Division I school.
Yeah.
I assume it's fairly similar to any
Absolutely.
collegiate. It's a commitment, right? So you got 40 to 50 hours of classwork. You got 40 hours of stuff related to your sport. And I did all kinds of other stuff. I was on student senate and did radio for the baseball team and a bunch of other things. I was very active in professional societies and stuff like that too. So, I didn't sleep in college, but yeah, it was great, and I miss that competition. I miss that experience that I had with that, getting ready for a game and the whole game and trying to win and the goals that were associated with that aspect of it. And I missed, at the time, I didn't think I'd ever miss the workout side of it, but as time has gone on, I really did start missing that workout aspect of it. Like this time of year, we would get up 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'd have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we went to the wrestler mat room and did a 2 hour high intensity interval workout. I didn't know what they were.
But
We
now you
just
have like,
called it,
there's actually terminology for these
winter
kinds of
workouts.
things.
But they were, yeah. And that's one of the things I've learned. There's
Absolutely.
science to this stuff. Other than just, trying to kill you, there's really science to it. And so what I and this is and so I kind of fell back on what did I do back in college on those winter workout mornings. And a couple of, a little over 2 years ago, I started taking karate. My now 10-year-old started doing karate almost 3 years ago now. And as I was taking her to class, I was sitting there watching it, going, "Man, this looks like so much fun." And I was really debating about joining a gym again and getting back into,
Okay.
going and doing that kind of stuff, just lifting weights and treadmill. And but I was like,
Oh
"Oh
yeah,
God, so
it's definitely
boring,"
not for everybody.
Yeah, and so I started watching this karate. And I was like, "You know, that just looks like fun." So for my birthday, I talked to the kind of the business person at the dojo. I said, "What would it take for
Like,
me to
oh,
try this
okay.
out?" She goes, "Just show up tonight." And yeah, and I was like, "Okay." So I did, and it kicked my butt. I mean,
That's how you know it
I
was good
was
for you.
dying at the end of that class, and I was like, "Oh my
It's
God!"
anything but
I
comfort
was like,
food.
"Oh my God, I got to do this again." Yeah, and so I got into it. We have a, I have a fantastic dojo. I mean, it's a very family first. I call it family fun fitness dojo, but they're very serious about the martial art aspect, right? But at the same time, it's fun. I mean, the instructors are amazing, and everybody, essentially my teammates is what we call ourselves. I mean, we're just great. It's just great people to go be around, and I've got a good collection of friends that I didn't necessarily have up here because I'm not from this area, and I was really not enjoying life around here, but I am now
Yeah,
because
they're
a lot of it's
helping to
because of the people
acclimate
at
to
the
the
dojo,
area
just
and have
making those
good
connections.
relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I love the developer community around here, but I live up in Hatboro area, Willow Grove, which is about 45 minutes from the developer epicenter down where the down in Malvern where the Microsoft stuff is. So I don't necessarily trek all the way down there for all the meetings all the time.
Yeah.
But karate is like 4 or 5 nights a week.
And consistency,
So I've
right? It's
got
like
the and we're
you
all
develop a
there and
habit.
most of us have the kids. Yeah, and most of us have the kids in the class, so we talk to each other during the kids' class and all that kind of stuff. So but you know, part of that, like I said, it was fitness. So they would make us do certain exercises. And one of the requirements to get your black belt, which I'm still a year and a half out from being able to earn, is what we call a 500 club. And so last January, in a couple of the classes, since they had us close the class out with a 500 club, which if you, most people would enter that going, "Oh my God, it's gonna, how am I going to do this?" But it's 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats. These are all body weight exercises.
And
So
all
you
right,
could
body
do these
weight
in
is
your
a
living room
fantastic way
without any
to get into
expense.
shape and stay in shape as well.
And I would have never dreamed that coming from
Yeah,
my football
exactly.
background. I would think you have to have a ton of weight, you know, because I thought I was weak when I benched 425 pounds, you know. But so, you did the push-ups, the sit-ups, the squats, and
Okay.
then 100 pump kicks on each leg. Which basically means you're just,
Kick,
you know,
kick,
you're
kick,
just
kick, kick.
holding your leg out to the side and doing a wheelhouse, oh,
Yeah, but
yeah,
your
wheel
heart's
kick or a
going the
roundhouse kick,
entire
just
time
bam,
because
bam, bam,
it's all
bam, in
full
rapid
body
succession.
exercises.
Yeah, especially if the faster you go. So that's what I did when I started trying to lose the weight. I said, okay, every morning I would get up before the kids would, and I would try to do a 500 club. That's where I started. I said, because this is something I know, and I knew getting up in the morning was another way to get your metabolism, you know, jump started, because that's one of the reasons why we got up and had to be in the mat room by 5 o'clock,
That's right. Like, make it a
you know, get
priority.
the workout in before everything else. And I remembered, and I remembered back in college, the days we did that, the rest of the
Yeah, and
day,
it's true. It's
I
true.
was just energized.
So you
I
get
mean,
like that runner's
I
high,
could
is what they
feel my
call it,
muscles
running. I don't
burning
know
and
if there's a
stuff. And
similar term for just overall fitness.
Yeah, well, you know, as you go through the day, your body's kind of recovering. And there's a scientific term for it that I found out in the last 6 or 7 months called EPOC. And I can't remember the I wrote it in the book what that actually stands for, but the acronym is EPOC. And what happens in these high intensity interval training sessions
Oh, excess
is your
post-exercise
body
oxygen consumption.
yes, thank you. So your body consumes oxygen at a rapid rate. And of course that, you know, ultimately that metabolizes with the fat in your system and creates lactic acid, et cetera. But your muscles need oxygen to function. So what happens is your body works really hard to replenish the oxygen that was taken out of the muscles. In doing so, it burns more fat and essentially the energy you've stored up trying to recover the oxygen. And this recovery process can take 24 to 48 hours. So maybe I've burned 600 calories in a 45-minute workout, for example. For the next 48 hours, I may burn an extra 200 calories recovering that oxygen and not have to do anything. And another thing I learned in the last few months is the term Tabata, which is named after a Japanese Olympic coach. I think it was speed skating coach. I think it was in the
Tabata
70s or
workout.
80s. Anyway, what he did was he started making his athletes do these super intense intervals. So like for 20 seconds, just go 120%, for example, and then take 10 seconds off, and then 20 seconds, 10 seconds, and then do these intervals. And you can get a really intense workout in 4 minutes.
Okay.
And then it kicks in this epoch effect. So, you know, if you can really just push your limit for these cycles, you could do a 20-minute Tabata round and get the same effect of like a 90-minute workout, for example. And so this is a great way to compress your time. So talk about like compression algorithm. Exactly. So, and, you know, as developers, we're always looking for these ways to be a little more efficient and how to compress, you know, one of the things about web performance, you want to make sure you're using gzip compression, for example, and or some compression algorithm. I think Zopfli is another one that's starting to get popular and things like that. But or if you watch, have HBO and you've watched Silicon Valley, you know, the Pied Piper guys and their compression algorithm.
As a whole, that's effectively fantastic what min-maxers, right? So how do you get as much done possible to the max in the minimum amount of time? So we're always trying to find little tricks and cheats and shortcuts to kind of make this happen.
So, you know, if you've got an excuse for not working out, don't just jump into doing Tabata because you're not going to be able to succeed with that. But you could essentially schedule a 20-minute session every morning before breakfast and get something going that's going to give you that kind of high the rest of the day, as well as burning
those
calories.
It's like your coffee for the morning.
So you don't, you don't have to.
It's 11 o'clock. I haven't had coffee yet, and I love my coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
I got up and ran 4 miles just before this.
Yeah, I don't.
Consider yourself lucky.
I never have gotten into coffee. I don't like hot drinks, so I don't. Yeah. So interesting about coffee. I was watching ABC had this really corny show called My Diet Is Better Than Yours, and one of the diets on there is called the Wild Diet. And so he made the guy take the sugar and cream out of his coffee and replace
it
with butter.
Do they call it like bullet coffee? Okay.
I don't know, but
I had a coworker
the guy lost a ton of weight on this plan.
It's like a way of like curing hangovers, but I've never built up the courage to actually put some butter in my coffee for fear that the fat and everything else would just completely decimate me. But I'm curious now, so keep going.
Well, you do. Okay. Yeah, you do. Well, you do need fat to burn fat, and that's one of the things that the guy this diet kept making, comment about. And he's absolutely right. You just don't need bad fat. You need good fat.
With a little bit of milk.
And you know.
Okay.
Something like that. Anyway, but do you know who J.J. Watts is? Okay, J.J. Watts is one of the, I guess, top NFL personalities. Okay. He plays defensive end for the Houston Texans.
Oh yes, I've seen this guy.
And he's just a beast. He's a monster.
Like picking up. Not refrigerators, but like vending machines and stuff. Holy cow, and the guy's younger than I am. Jeez. He's
I'm sure,
289. He is a beast.
Oh, yeah, he's I don't know. Yeah. Well, I remember last August, there was an article on ESPN that it was kind of like a, you know, personal profile of him. But the whole point of the article
Holy
is
cow.
He eats like 9 chicken breasts a day. He has like a 9,000 calorie a day diet because he works out 6 to 9 hours a day.
Fills up 9,000
don't try that at home,
calories
by the way.
A day. Holy cow.
It was something like that, yeah. But he was feeling sluggish. And I'm thinking, dude, you're working out 6 to 9 hours a day. Yeah, I'd feel sluggish too. But he, you know, he had a lot of, you know, tests done on him. And basically what the nutritionist told him is like, you're not eating enough fat. You need to wrap a couple of your chicken breasts in bacon. And sure enough, that helped him get back on track and everything, because he had no fat. He
was
just not eating any fat at all, any measurable amount. Exactly. So he was basically eating really lean chicken breasts and vegetables and fruit, and that's pretty much it. And I think I can kind of attest to something similar, because there are points now that I think I overdo it a little bit as far as that goes. Like this past weekend, I went a little off my diet some, and. Yeah, and cheat meals are important. So I went and got a hamburger and sweet potato fries for lunch on Saturday.
That's
I felt
fair.
So much better afterwards. But I had done a 3-hour workout before that, and was feeling a little lightheaded. I was feeling a little lightheaded, and I felt a lot better after the burger. I'll just put it that way. So sometimes you do need to kind of have a balance to it. So it's not necessarily a terrible thing if you. And I didn't go to a fast food place for the burger. I went to one of the, I guess, I call them the millennial restaurants. Yeah, it's kind of the Chipotle style
Oh.
places. So anyway,
Yeah, I mean, look at this guy's diet.
little
It is
healthier,
absurd.
I guess, made. And I had sweet potato fries
I
with
love
it.
sweet
You
potato
can't get
fries.
sweet potato
I love sweet
fries at most
potatoes.
fast food places. Sweet
Really?
potatoes are so
And
much
sweet
better for
potatoes
you
taste
than
so
regular
good.
potatoes, which aren't the worst. Yeah, well, they're full of really good minerals and stuff. And one of the things I found about sweet potatoes is if you boil them, the
Yeah.
nutrient value actually goes up compared to baking, which is
Holy
odd.
cow.
It's usually the other way around, so. But yeah, JJ Watts is on there. He's got he actually has some Xbox
Okay.
Fitness stuff that
Do
comes
you want to
with
explain
Xbox
Xbox
Fitness for
Fitness?
free. Although it did one of his work. Sure. So Xbox Fitness is turned into a key part of my fitness routine. I didn't have it during my weight loss cycle. I didn't have an Xbox One. It's only available on Xbox One. But what I did on the Xbox 360 is I got bored doing the 500 club. You
Yeah.
do that for about a month and you're just like, oh my God, there's got to be more to this. So I started like just jogging around the living room and the kitchen, and then I was like, you know what? I got this Xbox boxing thing on here, which is a lot like my karate. So I started launching that, and I started doing this interval, essentially built an interval workout. And part of my interval workout is I'd do some laps, and then I'd stop, and I would do a Kinect boxing segment, which would usually, depending on how fast I knocked the dude
Yeah.
out, was 45 seconds to a minute and a half. And it's just basically shadow boxing, really intense for, however long until I knock the guy out. Occasionally, I would get knocked out, but that's another story. So yeah, I started kind of competing against myself on that, trying to earn rewards and
Yeah.
knock the guy out faster, get a certain number of points and things like that.
Okay.
And it made my workout a lot more fun. And so for my birthday this
All
past
right.
year, I got an Xbox One with a Kinect. And I got it for two reasons. One, I wanted to cut the cord. I know the Xbox is a fantastic platform to cut the cord. And I wanted the Xbox Fitness because I wanted to see if I could not take
Okay.
that Kinect boxing experience up a level. And it really did. So the Xbox Fitness gamifies your workout for you, if you will. There's all kinds of points that you essentially accrue and progress that you can do
Well,
it.
they
And there's
have
a
new
lot of
ones coming
different
out too.
workouts.
Yeah.
Every now and then
I was
they'll
using
drop new ones in there. I don't know how
Jillian
long it's been since
Michaels's
you've looked at it, but when
yoga,
I
but now there's a new one, Jake Ferrer, I can't pronounce his name, Yo 30. Whoa. So yeah, that's
Yeah,
definitely new.
that
That
one's
was not
free.
there
That one comes
before.
with it. Yeah, I had the Jillian Mike and yoga. I got that for my wife. I haven't done that one yet, but I may do it. I'm starting to cheap. I've got two other Jillian Michael workouts now, and she kind of mixes MMA and yoga and some other. There was one thing I was doing today. It was called Bazanda or something. I don't know, some weird dancing move. It was part of the
Yeah,
workout.
they are
It
not
just
for
felt
everyone.
odd. I felt like I told my wife
A
about it. She goes,
cheesy
"That looks like a
magician.
cheesy magician." I'm like, "That's it." But so as you go through these workouts, and the first one I did was a MOSA MMA one because it really appealed to my karate stuff. And basically, it's an interval workout, right? Using moves from, in this case, mixed martial arts.
Okay.
There's another MOSA on there my wife does. It's a dance one. Dance doesn't appeal to me, but it appeals to her. So they've got different styles of workouts, and you should be able to find something that appeals to your, focus or what you're interested in. And each one of these workouts are led by a
Okay.
professional fitness instructor like Jillian Michaels, for example, which most
Right.
people would know because she was on Biggest Loser forever.
Yeah.
Not losing weight, but helping people lose weight. And she also did a show called Sweat Inc. that I got into this past summer. So you do the as you do these interval things, the Xbox Kinect actually tracks and essentially coaches your movement and
Right.
evaluates the accuracy of the movements. And that's very important to do these exercises correctly. Because if you don't do the exercise
Right. You're just
correctly,
kind
you
of
can
shooting
hurt
yourself at
yourself
that
or not
point.
get any benefits out of it, for example. Right. So, it does a good job of trying to give you feedback of, like the workout I did today has some intervals in there where you need to do the motions slow and deliberately. I am terrible at that. In fact, that's kind of
Yeah.
my theme this month is going slower to go fast. And so it's barking at me, slow down, you know, and
Yeah, I
do
gotta go
the
fast, I gotta
mode,
go
'cause I'm sitting there
fast.
going wham, wham, wham. And it's like, I'm like, why is it
Yeah,
not
you're not
maxed out
slowing down, dog.
on the quality over there? 'Cause that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it pops up and it says,
There's
slow
a reason they're
down and
going
match the
slow, right?
instructor. And I'm like, oh, 'cause I don't really watch them. I don't really, I watch the first
Yeah. But
blip,
also there's a
get the
lot of
gist of the
benefit
thing, and
from
I'm gone,
going
you know?
slow too. Like you're getting
And,
more burn,
so
you're
I'm,
getting a deeper burn.
yeah, and that's the JJ Watts is a strength one, and it was really slow
Yeah,
and
he's kind of like
boring. I felt
slowing your pace
lethargic
down as a
afterwards
whole.
because I really like the interval workouts in the morning. Yeah, so yeah, you do these intervals, it grades you. So you as you're doing it, it's got this little semicircle bar that's kind of the further over it goes, the more green it is, which means you're getting more points, and it's scoring points as you go through, and you can get up to 5 stars on each round, and every now and then it randomly compares you to the first time it'll do that, it'll compare you to the average in your age group and sex. So like if you're in the mid 40s and a male, and you see the average is a little higher than you're working out, it's because of me. I blow those things away. But then after that, it
And
starts
you can like
comparing
compare
yourself
your
to
numbers against your
yourself
friends and see how
randomly,
they're doing too.
and it really irritates.
You had a couple friends who were doing
Well,
this.
most of my
Granted, I
friends
think
don't
a
work
few of
out,
them, it was because they worked at
unfortunately.
Xbox, so.
Exactly. So, yeah, I need to
Yeah.
get more friends get doing the Xbox Fitness with me. But yeah, so yeah, I it and it's one of those things. Like before every workout, it says, okay, this is your max that you've gotten on this particular workout. So like yesterday, I think the max was 66,200 on the one I did. I was like, all right, I'm gonna get 63,000. I'm gonna get 63,000. So the whole time through, I'm busting it trying to get those extra few points on every single round. And you know, when it's all said and done, I was upset because I didn't get 63,000. I got 62,948 or something like that. And I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding. But I beat my max, which was the real goal. But I
Yeah,
was like,
yeah.
not happy I didn't make my max goal, you know, my actual target goal. And that's what I do. I try to set those expectations, you know. So like when I go to karate class now, I have a pretty good idea how many calories I'm burning in each class. And I'm always trying to see if I can max that out, for example. So like even the band has some gamification in it. So for example, when I have it log my running, it tells me
Okay.
this is your
So it kind
personal
of gives you that
best at a mile,
encouragement
for
or
example.
incentive to keep going.
And it'll track that for you. Yeah, and then I love the data that the band will give me because it'll break down, okay, you burn this many calories from fat, this many calories from carbs. You know, basically here's your pace per minute calorie burn, and all this stuff gave me a lot more insight into what my body should probably be doing and understanding what am I actually burning, for example. And then you know, I could then translate, okay, I burn 400 calories of fat. Okay, well, I know fat carbs are
Yeah.
9 calories per gram or something like that, and then the carbohydrates are 4 calories per gram, you know. It takes a lot
Right.
more to burn fat than it does carbs, for example. So you can get a better idea of what you've got to do to burn the fat and get through the certain thresholds and all that kind of stuff. And there's no exact science to it. Everybody's body's slightly different, so forth and so on. So anything like a band or a Fitbit or whatever, they're doing a best guess estimate
Yeah.
based on research and algorithms have been created. So I see people dogging is like, well, I wore a Fitbit and a Microsoft band, and the Microsoft band was
Right.
not exactly the same as the Fitbit. And I'm like, okay, so which one was wrong? And they just assumed that the Fitbit was right. So it's sort of like a lot of developers think that Chrome is absolutely correct with web standards when
Yeah.
it's not really as accurate as you think it is, you know. And so you put in your mind, well, Fitbit must be the one that's
Right,
accurate. Well,
right.
it's
Yeah, they
not
got to
necessarily, and
make the
they
best
are
decision based on
guessing,
what they
you
know
know.
at that time.
Right. So the way I look at it is when my man says that I burn 3,500 calories in a day, I'm
Yeah.
thinking that's probably correct, plus or minus 100 calories. And I'm fine with that. I'm not looking for, I burn 3,500 calories today. That equates to exactly 1 pound. I ate 2,000 calories. Therefore, I
Right.
should have lost right at 0.45
Yeah.
pounds.
And
You know,
yeah, and your metabolism
it
is,
doesn't
you know,
work
gradually
that way.
changing throughout the day. There's a number of factors you have to consider into all of this.
Oh, there's so many. I'm looking for a pretty good idea of how am I doing. And
I
a
tried
lot
that
of
for a
people will
while
take
too, and
a
I had the
detailed
same
food log. I
issues.
thought that was way too tedious. But right now I've got a pretty good idea how many calories are in any kind of meal that I eat, just because I have a decent idea of what I'm eating and know the calories for the most part is in stuff. And that's a very important thing you got to understand is the food you're taking in, what is the nutritional balance of that particular food? And like I don't worry about my fruit smoothies. I know they're probably 200 to 400 calories each, but for the most part, there's like zero fat in them, and it's nothing but goodness in them. And some days I'll have
There's
two
nothing
of
wrong
them
with that.
just because, they're really yummy. So,
No, keep
yeah,
going, sorry.
I know. But yeah, so you got to know what you're eating, and that's the same thing when we build, applications. We got to know
You're like,
what
what's
we're
happening
using
under
to
the
build those
hood
with. What
when
are the
I
ingredients
add
we're
that
using
library, when I
to make our
consume that library
applications?
or that framework that I'm not really sure what it's doing,
Yeah.
but hey, it looks like it works, so throw it in there.
Yeah, so I think the general attitude that developers have when they say pick React or an Angular or something like that is they're like, well, I don't understand how to build any of the front end stuff, and they just freak out and panic. And it's funny because we do this the same reason we eat and order fast food is because we don't think we can cook. And the reality is cooking's not that hard. And once I
Oh,
lost the
that's
weight,
where we spend
ironically, I
most of our time
started
in our house
watching
is
the
watching
Cooking
all the
Network
Food
and the
Network
Food
and the cooking
Network.
shows. Cupcake Wars.
And I got really into well, I tell you what I really got into was Good Eats. Or what's his name? I haven't
Oh, yep,
watched
been
it in a
watching a
while
lot of
now,
that.
but
Gordon
he does Cutthroat
Ramsay.
Kitchen. Yeah. Well, no, not Gordon Ramsay. Oh, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Anyway, Good Eats. There's about 24 of them on Netflix if you got Netflix. But it's really good because he gives you like the food anthropology, the history of the particular kind of food, as well as some of the chemistry and science that goes on in it. So it's very easy to understand how to cook things a little. It gives you that little insight into how to cook things that I needed. So I'm able to cook salmon, for example, a lot more flexibly than I used to. And and chicken, even just cooking chicken, I'm doing a lot better job. And hopefully my wife agrees with me, but but I understand how to cook vegetables. I never understood how to cook vegetables. And it's not hard to steam vegetables and things. I mean, we have a vegetable steamer, but those things you can go out the store and get for a few bucks. They're not terribly expensive, and they're so useful. And like I got a Nutribullet for Christmas.
Yeah,
Those
you
are a
throw
little
meat in
pricey
there, whatever
blender,
you
but man,
want.
they just pulverize
And
everything. So,
you know what?
oh, I know. So yeah, we gotta learn how to cook our real food,
And this
just
is
the same
all
way we need
like
to learn
particularly
how to
relevant
cook
to
our software
developers, and not only
applications.
from like the software aspect, but like the overall health aspect. I mean, I'm 6'4", 230. I'm just a tall fellow. I don't fit anywhere. So I have, a special chair that I can sit in, and I'm sitting for a large part of the day. And if you are, out of shape and you're just compressing your spine all day and you're not getting up and walking around, like there are tons of health implications that'll follow you down the road because of this.
Yeah, I mean the band's got a new feature in it now. You can set it to prompt you after,
There's
say,
a developer,
45
Brian
minutes or an hour and say,
Ponciano,
get
who
up and
made
do
this game
something.
Retro City Rampage and all remakes of it in the last several years. And for a while, he had like suffered from like poor health because he spent so much time crunching and getting this thing done and sitting in a chair for essentially a couple of years as he got it done. And looking back, now he's in incredible shape, but he's been kind of writing about how he's getting into better shape because of this. Saying like, hey, I kind of tore apart my body by doing nothing but sitting for years. So, yeah.
Well, I probably did I probably did something similar. In fact, I had lost a big chunk of weight about 8, 9 years ago, back in 2007. I dropped 56 pounds in 6 months and got back to college weight. And this time I got back to high school weight. Now I've gotten down to junior high
All right.
weight.
And most people are
I
putting
actually
them on,
lost
you're
20
cutting them
pounds over the
out.
holidays. So there you go. I did, and I didn't even really necessarily try, to be honest with you. I just applied my science stuff a little better, especially writing the book. I was like, oh, I gotta do this a little differently. Anyway, I was in good shape in college. I could run a 5K in 18 and a half minutes in college, and most of that was because I had to run that fast for football. Like we had a test when we reported for fall camp in August, I had to run a quarter mile in under 60 seconds.
Oh.
And then I had a 10-minute break, and then we had to run 10 40-yard dashes. They weren't for a specific
Yeah.
time, but we weren't allowed to walk, that's for sure. We had to haul ass. Then we had a 10-minute
That's
break,
not
and then I
fun.
had to
I played
run
lacrosse
a
in college and made the same
six-minute
test.
mile. And if yeah, and if you didn't make those
Yeah.
times,
Because you know
especially
what? If
being a
you're not in
walk-on, you
shape,
could just get
everyone
cut
else
that
is.
day.
So who wants to be there?
Or you had to get. Yeah, exactly. And you know, if they wanted to keep you around, they made you get up at 5 or 6 the next morning and do the test all over again until
Yeah,
you
we had a
passed
very
it.
similar test. That's
And
funny.
you don't
But
want to do that.
if
You
you
want to get
didn't
that
do
over with and out of the
it,
way.
I mean, we had like the mile run time. If you didn't do
Yeah.
it in the beginning of practice, you had to go again after practice. But that's after you've been playing for 2.5 hours. Yep.
Oh, that's
So you
even
knew,
worse.
like, hey, I'm giving it
Oh,
all.
I know. Yeah. So I got my back then. I could run a mile,
Holy
and the
cow.
fastest I ever got timed was 5 minutes and 15 seconds,
Yeah.
which I never ever considered myself a fast guy. And my frame of reference at the time was I'm
Yeah.
even running a quarter mile in 52 seconds. I still wasn't fast because
Yeah.
we had defensive backs and wide receivers running them under 45 seconds. I mean, they were just
Yeah.
off world
Yeah,
class
but
time. I
that's
didn't
the
realize they
fitness
were
level you're
just
at that
off world
point.
class time. Yeah, and some of those guys had 5 and 6%
Less they're having
body
to carry
fat, and you're
around.
talking about the body mass index. Exactly. So you look at that body mass index. When you've got more muscle density and you're trained to be an athlete, you can have a higher BMI.
Absolutely.
It's the fat that you're really more worried about, and so some of the BMI index stuff will tell you. Also, make sure you measure your waist, and if you're especially if you're male and you got your waistline's encroaching
Yeah,
on 40
definitely.
inches, you're getting into dangerous territory. You know, things like that. So there's more aspects to that stuff too. Speaking of the BMI, one of the things I'm working on right now is doing some analysis
Okay.
based on httparchive.org, which is a Steve Souter site. And what he does is he runs the same test every 2 weeks using web page test to get
Okay.
data on the top 100,000 home pages. And that produces this running statistical analysis of websites out there. So, for example, the
Okay.
average web page now is around two and a
Yeah.
quarter megabytes, which is just insanely large. So, one of the things I'm looking at doing is taking his data and doing some statistical analysis
Okay.
over it and
I
creating something I want to
like
call the
that.
web mass index. So basically, yeah, how fat is your page and what should your page size be
Wow, this is cool. I
to
like this
get
page.
it down to, say, the 2 to 3 second load time. So psychologically, you want your page to load within a second. For business purposes, you definitely want it to load in under 3 seconds, because
That's
at 3 seconds,
That's
people
exactly
start
what
going
happens to me
to look
too.
at cats on Facebook, for example. That's what I always say. You got 3 seconds to engage somebody. But the mind work thinks con thinks that instant is 100 milliseconds. That's what our mind perceives as instant. The mind starts disengaging. The short-term memory stuff starts triggering at 1 second or 1,000 milliseconds. And by 3 seconds, the mind's completely started to disengage altogether from whatever it was trying to do, assuming that it's just not going to happen. And that's really bad, because I mean, I've talked
It's
to
like,
many
oh,
developers and I'm like, oh, who
no.
cares if it takes 10 or 15 seconds to load a page? And I'm like, oh my God, it just irritates me. And it's no different than, you think about fitness. Fit people just look sexier, and people want to see fit people. People don't want to sit around and see really fat, obese people. And it's the same thing about web pages. They don't want to deal with really fat, obese web pages, or like games
Yeah.
that take 2 minutes to load the stuff up.
And you die in something, and then
I
you're
mean,
sitting there for 2 minutes,
like,
and you're
I'll
like,
sit there
what,
and play something on
really?
Xbox, and
You're essentially punishing
I'm
people
sitting there hitting the
for
button on the
trying
controller,
new
and nothing's
things and trying to be different
happening,
than
and
you
I
mean.
think.
Because every time they've got to go back and load for 1 minute, 2 minutes, they're thinking, like, I don't know if I
Yeah.
want to do this again.
Yeah, exactly. I just get disengaged. I don't really like the little video parts. Like, I'll play Halo, you get
Yeah,
done with
the
the section, then you got to wait for
non-interactive.
3 or 4 minutes for it to go through like a video. I don't know, like, I just want to go, keep going. But I'm
I
like,
am in
maybe
the
there's
same
something
boat.
relevant for the next level I got to watch.
So now we're coming around towards the stretch here.
Anyway,
the way I typically end every show is I'll ask, I asked the previous person who was on, in this case it was Howard Dortch. I asked him a question, and that was what the previous developer had, had come on and asked as well. So he, I should explain this more clearly. Someone had asked asked Howard a question. He answered it. And then I asked Howard to come up with a question for the next guest, who would be you. So, you ready? So, his question was, what is the future technology going to be, for example, 5 years out? And the case that he uses is like the mouse. That had changed the world, right? And changed the way we interact with computers. Recently, it was touch. What do you think the next big change in technology is going to be?
Well, I think right now, I think there's momentum on the IoT side, and I'm very interested to see where that goes. But there's something else that I'm really thinking about that I think extends out to the next level. And I've really been contemplating who's going to be the leader there.
Yes.
And it's this driverless car thing. And I really keep contemplating how, like, I really think maybe not my kids, but their kids are never going to know what it's like to drive a car.
They're not going to quite understand what it's like.
Yeah, and I'm thinking who is lining themselves up to be the leaders in that field, and I think it's going to be a combination of Tesla and Uber, because you think about the electric car thing, they're going to get that the refueling aspect of it nailed, and I noticed Tesla is going to the next car they're going to release is going to be $35,000, which is going to be affordable.
Yes.
Yeah, that's before the tax incentives. And then you think about Uber is essentially the, I need a car. So like, think about when you go to campus out at Microsoft.
So I used to rent a car.
How do you get
I
around
take
campus
Uber
most likely?
Every time I go to Seattle, and I was there last week. Yeah, I'll either walk or take a bus.
But when you're on campus and you need to go between buildings, what's the
the connector.
And you are it's called the Connect service, right? Yep. So you essentially call and say I need
lazy,
a driver.
But
so they essentially got their own private Uber service.
Right.
Exactly. And you may not necessarily want
down parking,
have a car
traffic,
that parks,
and
so, you know,
and a whole bunch of things.
You know, like, just like you said, you. Right, exactly. So I really kind of see that world, say, 5 years may be a really big stretch, but 10, 15 years from now, I really kind of think we're going to be lined up for something like the Tesla-Uber combination to essentially just say, I need to go to the grocery store, and a minute and a half later, this driverless electric car pulls up, pulls up to pick you up and take you to the grocery store.
Okay, well, there's a car there. It's called Johnny Cab.
It's been forever.
It's this creepy-looking car.
I can't remember the name,
I want to say driverless. It's essentially a robot that's driving you around, this creepy robot. But yeah, that's what I think of when you're describing this. Johnny Cab. Oh, it's so funny.
I'll have to go back and watch that movie now. Yeah, but I've really been pondering this a lot since Christmas because I've never used Uber, and but I really like the whole Tesla car line. They're just so sexy. They're too expensive for me, though. But, you know, every time I'm, you know, say down in King of Prussia or out at the Bellevue Center in Redmond, I always go to the Tesla dealership just to drool. So, and so many of y'all, I've never used Uber, but so many of y'all do, and I'm just yeah, that combo, that's what's going to be there. And I'm wondering
GM
if
just
the, you
put
know,
a lot
Fords
of money
to GMs
Lyft,
and stuff
Uber
are going.
So we'll see
to...
how that plays out.
There you go. But I'm wondering, are they going to come out with driverless car options? Are they are they working on this in secret? You know? Yeah, there's got to be some movement there. And it's going to be more... The Ubers and Lyfts are going to purchase fleets of these vehicles rather than you and I buying the car individually. And we're just going to have a subscription, just like we have an Easy Pass in our car for tolls. And it's just going to automatically debit our account for every time we go to the grocery store or something. Yeah. So you never have to worry about fueling your car and all that kind of stuff and maintenance of the car. We don't need driveways in our house and garages anymore. We're just going to use those for gyms.
I like it. So...
you see where I'm going with all this?
So my question to you now is, what would you like to ask the next developer who will appear on the show?
Oh. Well, since I'm caught off guard here, I'm trying to think. Let's kind of stick with our fitness theme. What are you doing today to ensure your
The
health for the
next
next 10
10
years?
years. Haha. That's a very good point too, because two episodes ago I had Ethan Leon. He was talking about the preservation of games, and now it comes down to, well, what are you going to do to preserve yourself to keep creating some of these applications?
That's interesting. And you think, and the Xbox Fitness in and of itself is a game. When you look in where it's classified on the Xbox, it's a game. And I like that because it's a game where you are the person that's really the whole thing. I mean, there's no gun involved, but it is
Yeah,
telling
that's a
you
good
how
point.
well you've killed things, how many
That's a very
calories
good
you've
way of
killed,
looking
you
at
know?
it.
So, yeah, so, I mean, I like that
Well,
genre of
hard
game
pressed. Well,
now. Let's
thank
put
you
it that
very
way.
much for
So.
hopping on. I think very insightful. Definitely a different angle, but I love talking about performance and numbers and how all this comes together. But also want to thank you for sharing your story. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go?
Sure. Well, my blog is lovetodev.com. A little play on my last name, so it's LOVE, the number 2, DEV.com. And as far as the fitness goes, I'm in the process of building a
Okay, the
fitness
normal fat
persona called
guy.
the normal fat guy. And I've got a place, I basically right now I've got a little placeholder site set up at normalfatguy.com. And I'm planning on, publishing there regularly too, articles and resources, and I've actually got some other books that I've already started piecing together too to go along with the one I just published about my weight loss story. Because there's a whole lot
Kind of
more
peeling away
depth
the
to
layers of the
this.
onion.
The more I learn it, the more I'm like, yeah. So I mean, to me, there's the exercise, there's the nutrition,
Oh, nice.
and then
Like
there's other
tough
things. I'm
mudders and
getting
things
into
like that.
obstacle course racing. Yeah. Well, the Spartan's the one I'm going to focus on. I did Tough Mudder and Spartan last year, and along with the Down Dirty Mudder, and I just was like, oh my gosh, getting back in shape, I didn't think I could do one of them. The
Just
first
want
one
to
I
keep
did, I was
going,
like,
keep going,
that
keep
was
going.
easy, and it brought back even more, inside
That
memories of
teamwork,
what
that
it was like to play
camaraderie.
football, and this is like, I can do this on my own. Yeah, and like Spartan, I like Spartan because it's got the competitive aspect to it. So I'm actually going to run with the elites
Well, keep
over
us
the
in the loop and
summer
let us know how
and
it's
see how
going.
well I can do.
Likewise. Thank you again, and I'll
All
see you
righty.
next time.
Thanks a lot. It's been great. All right. We'll be right back.